ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You may have noticed an increase in the number of layoffs over the past year or two. Losing your job when you don't expect it can be a real blow.
Had known that there was a restructure coming, but to be honest, hadn't thought that I would be in the crosshairs, if you like.
Every few years we see a shedding of staff and a changing of the guard as new technology comes in.
But there are things you can do to take back control of the process and lessons to be learned.
Be mentally prepared and believe in yourself no matter what.
I stayed for too long in some roles earlier in my career. You have to play the corporate game.
Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for This Working Life, how to deal with a redundancy. We'll hear from people who've been through it and get tips from an expert who helps people through to the next stage. Dr. Catherine Page is an organisational psychologist, and she's seen this process from both sides. She was recently made redundant herself.
Well, there were some opportunities that I could have applied for, and in that moment, I, having looked through the opportunities, made the decision to bow out of the redeployment process, which was probably partly about me re-establishing a sense of control, which is, I think, so important for humans in general, but particularly in a work context. And I made the decision to leave, and after that have essentially very deliberately taken a few months for myself to sort of reconnect with my purpose, think about where it is I want to go, and I'm really now embracing it as an opportunity, but I'm on the other side now.
Does that happen often, do you think, that being made redundant helps people to refocus and recalibrate their careers?
I think it does for a certain segment of the workforce. So I would say I'm very fortunate being a member of a profession. I've got skills that are relatively in demand, I like to hope and to think. So for me, yes, that is how I have chosen to manage the experience, but I'm also in a really fortunate position where I can. I think there are many segments of the working population that wouldn't have that opportunity to be able to sort of do a bit of soul searching and redefine their purpose. I think the reality would hit home pretty hard if you were a single parent in occupations that are sort of more sunset skills as opposed to sort of sunrise skills, if you like, a sole breadwinner for your family.
And here is Robert, not his real name, who is the sole breadwinner in his family. He's in his mid-50s and believes that being non-Caucasian also brings up further challenges in redundancy. And because there's so much at stake if he's identified, we haven't used his real voice either.
I've had three redundancies. The first time it happened, it was a shock. I felt terrible. My daughter was 1 year old and our mortgage was at its peak. We had a very rough time financially, and it took me 9 months before I started a new role. The second redundancy was also a surprise, though I managed to find an interim role within the organisation the next day, which enabled me to cash up for another 8 months before I was out of work. I found another role reasonably quickly that time, within a few months. The latest redundancy has been very similar to the GFC, in that it has taken me over a year to find a role, albeit a short-term contract one. I was surprised with the redundancy decision, though not shocked.
Dr. Catherine Page had a rather different response.
There was a moment of shock and probably denial. I didn't realise the conversation that we were having was an impact conversation. I thought it was more of a, here's what's happening with the broader team. And by the way, your whole team's roles are no longer in the new structure. And I think I felt a strong desire to hide, I suppose, the actual emotions I was feeling. So there was some turmoil inside, I would say, whereas externally, I imagine I would have just been very accepting. Yep, sure. Pretty professional, maybe a bit blunt.
Interesting. And do you think that because you would have had either had some of these conversations or at least helped people through these conversations as a psychologist, was it an out-of-body experience? How did you integrate both of those parts?
Out-of-body experience is exactly how I experienced it. So I think that there became this duality of me as a human and me as a psychologist, and they were both in play, but never in the same moment. So I was either in that human, like, oh, why is this happening to me? This sucks. What am I going to do? What does this mean about my skills? Am I irrelevant? Like, how can they do this to me? There was all that very natural human emotion. And then the psychologist in me was standing back from it saying, this is a strategic decision. This is about a role, not a person. This does not make any statement about your skills, who you are. You know, it is what it is. And then I think there was probably a part of that professional as well that went, oh, this is interesting being on the other side. This is the scientist in me. Not sure if I like this and in how it's coming across. Here's how I would probably do it differently in the future if this were me. So there was a learning component to it.
Tell me about that learning component. So what would you have done differently now that you've been the recipient of that conversation?
So I think the individuals that are tasked with making these decisions, you know, I do have empathy for them now that I'm on the other side. You know, it is a hard thing to do. And so naturally there is a script that needs to be followed. However, I do think even though there are things that need to be said in that process, there is still a place to be very human in that moment and to respond with empathy. And I felt such a strong need for that individual to just say, I'm really sad that this is happening to you. Even though he probably couldn't say that, I just needed that human. I needed to step outside of the process for a moment and go into, okay, let's put the process just here to the left. I'm so sorry that this is happening. I'm sad that this is happening. I know this is really hard. And there were moments of that, but I almost wanted to just like take that script and scrunch it up and throw it away and say, I know that this is not your fault. I know that you've had to make this decision. I get that, but connect with me as a human, please.
After the initial shock of being told her role was being made redundant, Catherine went through a process known as the change curve.
Denial, the anger, the negotiation, and then ultimately the acceptance. In no particular order, by the way, they can happen, you know, you can cycle back and forth through that and skip steps and then return to them later. That's all very natural. And I do think there is a real sense of emotion that changes through each of those steps. So whether it be in that denial phase is the, you know, this shouldn't be happening to me. This is something that happens to other people, to the anger of like, oh, all of the things that I've done for this employer, you know, I'm going to now pull back. There is potentially a feeling of wanting to be a bit like angry and talk negatively about it, which I would encourage people to not do, you know, because you don't want to burn bridges. Right through to acceptance where you go, you know what, I can actually turn this into a positive for myself. You know, I'm going to see this as an opportunity. I'm going to control what I can control and I'm going to go forward with my head held high. All of those things are very natural human reactions, I think.
And so is the best thing to do when you're going through this is kind of pay attention to where you might be on the curve at any particular time so that you're sort of trying to manage yourself a little bit?
Yes.
And nurturing yourself as well?
I think absolutely. So I think if you know that there is a process that you go through, it sometimes helps to depersonalize the experience a little bit because you can feel very wedded to the feelings when you're in them. And I can get really stuck in that, but knowing that, you know what, this will just be a couple of days, maybe a couple of weeks, and there is a process I'll go through and there is light at the end of the tunnel. Just being mindful of being able to tune into your emotions, because emotion is data. We're all feeling emotion all the time, whether we're aware of it or not. So tuning into that emotion, surrounding yourself with people who are positive, perhaps people who've been through it before and have come out the other end positively.
What are you doing with that emotion then? Because we're not acting out with the anger or the speaking out of turn. So what are we doing with it so that we don't repress it?
You're feeling it. You know, there's no other way really to describe it other than to say, you know what? Here's the feeling I'm having. It is what it is. I'm human. I like to say sometimes we're a bird with a broken wing, and that's okay. You know, it's okay to let people help us and to just feel the emotion. Well, you don't have to react immediately to that emotion. You can respond in constructive ways. It's okay to talk about it, but you can talk about it in ways that aren't negative or going to damage your reputation or actually also traumatize the people around you. Because sometimes what happens, I notice in an organization, is the first reaction people have when they hear your role's at risk is very naturally to want to reach out to you with care. So then the intention is good. But often what people say when your role is redundant is, I'm so sorry that this has happened to you. And they get this look on their face, which is very empathetic and caring. But actually it just signals to you, oh, something bad's happened to me. I'm a victim.
And so what might you do instead if you're trying to give somebody and acknowledge it and be human about it, but not give them the sad face.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
It's hard not to do the sad face. I think, firstly, when you reaching out to people is the right instinct because we want to be there for each other, but don't assume that how they're reacting to it or responding to it is actually as a negative. I had one person, I remember meeting with someone who I hadn't met before, and I told him that my role had been made redundant. And he said, "Oh, well done. Congratulations. Oh, that's exciting." And I was like, "Oh, that felt different." Not to say that you should always do that, because I think you need to know your audience, I think. So
maybe how are you feeling?
Yeah.
Rather than commiserations or whatever. I want to go into, we're looking at what do you do when you've heard that your role is being made redundant, and we were looking at just paying attention to our emotions because they're data. What other things might we be doing, particularly around the agency and control part, Catherine? Mm.
So I would say own the process by just getting as much information as you can about exactly what the steps are, what are the options and resources that are available for you, and just really control what you can control, which is information in this scenario. And don't assume the worst. I think a lot of times people start looking for jobs as soon as they hear their job is at risk. I would suggest just waiting to really understand the impact. If it is a scenario where the decision has been made that your role is no longer required, that's when I think you need to really prioritise your self-care, get into thinking about what are the things that I've achieved in this role, getting really practical, like writing 2 or 3 achievement statements. Like, here are the things that I'm most proud of having achieved. That's good for you as a human and your confidence, but also you're going to have to start to be able to present that kind of information to the market. Speak to people, be supportive, manage your self-talk, because there's going to be a lot of dialogue happening internally that can be unhelpful. So you want to just try not to do that. Sometimes just saying that dialogue out loud helps, because you go, oh, that's actually not very nice. Speak to yourself in a way that you would speak to a friend if they told you this news.
Dr. Catherine Page sharing what she learned as an organisational psychologist going through the redundancy process herself. You're listening to This Working Life on ABCRN with me, Lisa Leong. So your role has been made redundant. What comes next? Let's hear from someone else who's been through it.
My name is Erin O'Dwyer. I'm a journalist and editor, and I'm the director of a communications consultancy. I've had 2 redundancies over the course of my career. One was in 2016. When I left that job, I spent 6 months looking for another job. And so, of course, the severance, which was about 3 or 4 months, didn't cover me. So I started that next job with my ego a little worse for wear, and also in some debt. The next redundancy came along about 2 years ago, and I absolutely saw it coming, and I really prepared very carefully for it. And I started doing side hustles, basically, so that when the redundancy came, I was able to step smoothly and seamlessly from my permanent role into a full-time freelancing portfolio position working for myself. I needed to take ownership of my own career. I needed to take ownership of my work life. And what I found is that working for myself allows me to create a workplace culture that suits my values. And it also allows me to run my business in a way that ensures that I have really strong, diverse income streams.
Setting up your own business is not for everyone, though. You may need to find a secure, well-paying job with a regular paycheck. We're calling this person Chris, and we're not using his real name or his voice either.
I've been made redundant 3 times. There's been a lot of heartache involved, and it doesn't get easier, but it's been different each time. There's so much prejudice against unemployed people and ageism as well. The advice I have for others going through a redundancy is that as much as it feels like it's about you, it's not. Keep applying for other jobs, reconsider your career, but know that even if you do retrain, you can't go back at the same level. Take the time to actually focus on your health and hobbies. Try anything that can help with your mental health. Outplacement agencies are a good idea because employees typically don't have their resume updated or know how to apply for jobs.
Unless you've been through redundancy, you might not have heard about outplacement services. Sometimes your employer will pay for them. I asked outplacement expert Adrian Kelly why.
Mainly, it's the right thing to do. There's a small amount of organisations that have it in employment contracts that they need to provide this, but the majority do this voluntarily because they want to do the right thing by the people they're letting go. So they're letting go of people not for disciplinary reasons or performance reasons, but just because the organisation can't carry the position. So the individuals have done nothing wrong. So the organisation wants to do the right thing by making sure those people are supported towards whatever is next for them.
And what types of things fall within the bucket of outplacement services then?
From the beginning, it could be to help people deal with the emotions of what they're going through, because it's a big deal to go through this, especially for somebody going through this the first time. So helping people deal with that and process that so they're comfortable to move forward. Then it might be to help people figure out where they are in their career and what might be a great next step for them at this point in their career. Some people want to keep doing what they've been doing. Other people take that as an opportunity to reassess and maybe move into something different or move towards something they've always wanted to do and just haven't had the opportunity yet. So it could be a bit of career exploration. Once people settle on what next, then it'll be helping them get there. So it will be helping them with their branding and marketing, making sure their resume is strong and contemporary and likely to give them an edge in the job market. It could be helping them with new ways of looking for jobs. If somebody hasn't been in the job market for 10 years, everything's different now than what it was back then. Mm. So to help them get a head start on that without having to figure it all out themselves on the fly, might be helping with those job search skills or strategies, might be helping with interview skills. Many people are nervous about interviews or don't feel comfortable in interviews. So it's to help them get comfortable to understand what interviews are like now.
So what are some of those really important tools that people need to get on top of so that they can find a new role? So, for example, a platform like LinkedIn.
Yep, LinkedIn's becoming increasingly important. There's a real trend towards organisations actually going out there and recruiting directly. So not even putting an advertisement up, but actually going out there and searching for someone with the skills that they're looking for. This is something that can be a little bit of a hurdle for people that, you know, are a little bit averse to social media. So we try and help those people just in very small steps to just make a start to get something up there in a way that they're comfortable with and they can understand.
And in reality, Adrian, how long does it on average take for someone to find a new role when their last one was made redundant?
As a general rule of thumb, the higher up the organisational levels you are, the longer it takes because there's fewer roles at those levels. So it's a bit of a pyramid. The labour statistics with the federal government Department of Employment, the most recent information I did see there was saying that in most of the capital cities around Australia, and this is not for people with support, this is for everybody through loss of job, it was about 40 weeks to get another role in capital cities and a little bit longer than that in regional areas. When people are getting support though, they're getting short-circuit that process, and we'd probably typically see our people within 3 months in another role, but some a bit longer, some a bit less.
And what about in terms of my self-talk? What would you say about that, and what advice would you give me?
Well, firstly, we'd say you've had a successful career. Unfortunately, your role, your position has been made redundant, but your skills are still valid. You still have a lot to offer. You will get another job. Some employer will be so thrilled that you came along. They'll be so happy to have you on board. We just need to keep that in mind. You will have days where you've got that little negative inner voice, and we need to just try and challenge that voice and try not to let it get too loud. We'd encourage people to think about who in their circle they have for support. Who lifts you up? You know, we've all got those friends that when we talk to them, you know, we feel better and stronger. And we've got other friends that, well-meaning as they are, they bring us down a little bit, you know. Oh, it's really terrible. Yeah, it's really hard out there, isn't it, to get another job? You know, try and spend more time with the first one than the second one. You know, it's really important to have support and to talk to people, you know, whether it's your partner, family, a close friend. Just it's important to talk to people. And if you're really feeling in a bad way, you know, even more important. And if you don't want to, or, you know, it's past talking with your family or friends, you know, to get help where it might be more appropriate, and that might be family doctor. So just challenge the negative thoughts, keep talking with people that lift you up, and be good to yourself. You know, maybe use this time between jobs to make sure you stay healthy, and that can be making sure you maybe work in a little bit of time for exercise. Don't get so panicked about finding another job that you're frantically, you know, out there looking for work and doing nothing else and running yourself into the ground. You know, leave some time for exercise or for spending time with your family. Or maybe you've been working hard in your role for 20 years. Now might be the time where you can do the school pickups or drop-offs for a while, you know, things that you haven't been able to do because of the requirements of your role. So working in a little bit of that me time is really helpful now, as well as planning your day around looking for a role.
Outplacement expert Adrian Kelly. The person we're calling Chris suggests an alternative to redundancies.
I'd like employers to think about other ways to manage redundancy. Are there alternatives to making people redundant? Could the employee go on a 3-month holiday or go 3 days a week? Redundancy should be the last resort because it's really difficult to come back from. I get that it's hard for employers, but it seems that if there are alternatives, that would be much easier.
And here's some more practical advice from the person we're calling Robert, as someone who, like Chris, has been through the process of redundancy 3 times.
Keep your resume up to date while working. Keep a running list of quantifiable achievements in your current role that you can immediately fill in if the worst happens. Go to conferences and meet people in your industry while you have a job. Consider volunteering to keep engaged and active, ideally reinforcing your experience. Book coffee meetings with your network and ask them for advice and to introduce you to people who they know might have a need for someone with your skills. Meet recruiters who specialize in your field in person. Prepare for interviews, tough questions. There are good books that can help you. Know your value and your value proposition to an organization. Stay organized. Use a spreadsheet to track meetings, notes, applications, interviews, and see where in the process you are dropping off so you can fix it or try something different. Be kind to yourself and others.
Dr. Catherine Page is looking ahead.
I'm focusing on things that give me purpose and meaning, like writing a book. But I would be lying if I said there isn't some fear deep down about uncertainty. There is a financial reality to my world, like anyone. So I'm just trying to sit with that and be proactive, but not be unkind to myself.
Thank you, Catherine, and thanks for sharing.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Organisational psychologist, Dr. Catherine Page. So the things you can do to prepare for redundancy include getting your CV up to date, maintaining networks with people at your work and others in your industry, and coffee catch-ups in person to learn about opportunities and to test the waters. Now, if it happens to you, remember, it's your role that's being made redundant, not you personally. Try not to panic. Take some time to absorb the news. It's a process. When you feel ready, meet with recruiters, learn how to market yourself so you can find the next opportunity, and keep up a routine, exercise and spend quality time with the people you care about. Thanks to Adrian Kelly, outplacement specialist, Erin O'Dwyer, journalist, editor and communications consultant, and 2 people who've been through redundancy. We're calling them Chris and Robert. Next time, how to work and take care of yourself like an elite athlete. The official psychologist for the Australian Olympic team, Caroline Anderson, also works with doctors, lawyers and other high-performing individuals to improve their performance at work, and she's going to give you some tips. You've been listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks, mixed by Elise Simons on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, work it, baby.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.